Hello and welcome to Leeds Voices, the podcast brought to you by the University of Leeds. In this episode, we're joined by David Gedge, songwriter, lead singer and guitarist in one of the university's best loved bands, The Wedding Present. In 1985, David, who studied mathematics at Leeds, formed the band with friends Sean Charman, Keith Gregory and Peter Saloka. Now the only original member in the band, David chose to mark the 40th anniversary on campus with a special concert in LUU. We spoke to him ahead of the highly anticipated gig, all about his time at Leeds in the late 70s and early 80s, writing music and life as the leading member of an indie rock group.
Here in the podcast studio at the University of Leeds with David Gedge of The Wedding Present. Welcome back to campus, David.
Thank you very much. Nice to be back.
I'm going to take you right back. I think you've had a trip down memory lane today. So tell me about what initially brought you to Leeds back in the mid-1970s.
Well, I was actually born in Leeds, in Bramley, and my parents moved to Manchester when I was three. So I grew up in Manchester. Because my dad's from Leeds, my mum's from Manchester. But then when I was, you know, looking for universities, I mean, a couple of reasons. One is that, you know, there was a certain feeling of, if I go to Leeds, it's where I was born, so there's that kind of link. But then also, I was told that the Leeds University mathematics department was particularly good, and I did mathematics. And then also, I used to look at the NME and Sounds and Melody Maker, and I used to think Leeds is quite vibrant. You know, it's smaller than places like Manchester and Glasgow and stuff, but for its size, like all the bands, you know, that like a national touring band seemed to play here. And then also, there was quite a good local scene, especially the kind of music I was interested, which was, you know, kind of John Peel stuff, you know. Like indie rock and that, and there was bands like the Gang of Four and the Mekons and like a whole, you know, little scene going on. So I applied to Leeds as my first choice and I got in. So I came back in 1978.
And during your time here, obviously you studied and you were busy doing your maths, but were you also involved in the band scene at that time? Because I know The Wedding Present came a little bit later.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been in bands as long as I can possibly remember. Even before I could even play instruments, I used to, you know, pretend I was in bands. It's something, you know, people often say, when did you decide that you wanted to be a musician? And there's no answer to that, really, because I can't remember. You know, it's always, you know, there's pictures of me at the age of five, you know, playing my parents' record collection and being obsessed with music. And so it's always something that's been there. And so, yeah, when I was at school, then in sixth form, and then at university, I was always in various bands. So, like, in the back of my mind, I was thinking one day I'm going to be famous. I'm going to be a, you know, famous musician. But I'm a sensible person. So I was kind of thinking, what if it doesn't work out? So maybe I should do a degree as well, because I was actually quite good at maths at school. So I decided to, you know, sort of do that. And I actually started doing an MSc after I finished my degree in pure mathematics. But that's when the band, you know, I kind of realised if I was going to take this seriously that I needed to kind of be full-time, really. So I actually became unemployed, which my parents hated, you know, because I obviously just finished a degree and then I was on the dole. So that didn't go down very well. But I spent a couple of years basically forming The Wedding Present, really. And it was all kind of ex-Leeds University students, because the University Union was a perfect place to recruit people, really. You know, on the notice boards, you just put, you know, I remember the advert that we put up, you know, musicians wanted, here's the influences, blah, blah, blah. And so we had a selection of drummers and bass players and guitarists. And then by 1985, we had this little lineup, and we saved enough money to make a single. And so I've been doing that ever since, really. Here I am 40 years later.
Yeah. No, that's great. I mean, were you still living in Leeds? Were you in a bedsit kind of existence in that time beyond being a student? Was that where?
Yeah, I've always lived in, well, let's say always. You know, since I came to university, I was in university accommodation at first. And then I've always lived in various grimy bedsits in Leeds 6. And then I was in Leeds 2, actually, just Churchill Gardens, which is actually quite near the university. That was like a housing association place. And that's kind of where the band started, really. That's where, you know, that was like our business address for a while. So, yeah, I've always kind of lived there. And I lived there until basically until about 25 years ago, I'd say. Yeah, okay. Yeah, left in about 2000.
So the band, you stayed in Leeds, basically. You didn't migrate to London or as many bands do, of course. Yeah,
and there was always that question of, you know, you should be moved to London. But we all like Leeds, and we didn't really like London. You know, it was exciting to go down there and play big concerts there. And, you know, we'd go down for interviews and radios, you know, Maida Vale, the BBC studios and stuff. Oh. But yeah, I don't think any of us envisaged the idea of living there as being something that we wanted to do. So we stayed in Leeds, and it was only the reason I left Leeds is because I started going out with an American lady, and she was from Seattle, and I lived in Seattle for a while. And when I came back in 2004 or 5, I think, everyone had gone by then. So there was no reason for me to. You know, I didn't have any kind of links here, so I just thought for a change I'd go and live somewhere else, and that ended up being Brighton.
Very good. Yeah, so there must have been some great venues you'd played in Leeds, like the Duchess and places like that, yeah? But I don't...
Well, that was the thing about Leeds. There was... I think it's changed a little bit now, but there was so many great venues, you know, and I remember even, you know, sort of before we formed the band properly, you know, we used to go out like most nights of the week to see live music at the Royal Park, and there was a place called Viva's Wine Bar that was in the city centre that was tiny, but that was great, and the Warehouse, and then obviously the university itself. With because somebody said today that they asked me, you know, so have you played here? And I was like, well, I played here about 6 different venues in this one complex, because there was the Tartan Bar and then the Riley Smith Hall, the R.H. Evans Lounge, I think there was one that was a tiny room, and then the refectory, obviously, and we're back playing in the Stylus, actually. So played loads of places in the actual union itself.
Yeah. And as your career went on, I know you've said about having this dream about being this, you know, famous rock star or whatever. Was there a moment, a turning point, when you realised it might become reality, it might be possible?
Well, yeah, there was actually, but it was very early on, because we had no money, and so, you know, we used to borrow money off of friends and stuff to buy equipment, and we eventually saved up enough money to go and record a single, and we did that in Leeds, a little studio up the road. Of the Otley Road there, and you kind of think, you know, okay, it's going to cost us money, but it's worth doing, and you know, we kept it, you know, the cost down to a complete minimum, and then, but John Peel played it, and not only did he play it once, he played it about 10 times, because, I mean, he was familiar with me because I was a fan of that program, so I used to, you know, send him demo tapes, and also, like, if he DJ'd, I would go and say hello, you know, it's me again. So I used to pester him, basically, and so he was aware of me, and then when he played that record, I mean, before that it was me trying to get concerts. So I'd ring up like some pub and say, oh, can we play? Well, you know, send me a tape and I'll see what I can do, and you know, it'd be loads of work, and eventually you'd play this gig and 6 people would turn up, you know. But after Peel started playing the record, people were contacting us and saying, you know, oh, come and play in Carlisle, come, you know, do a gig in London, you know. And we had a lot of attention from media, press, fanzines, all because of him. I mean, obviously BBC National Radio 1, so it was a big thing. And he was very well respected, obviously. So, so that... straight away it suddenly became, okay, this is working now, and we can actually afford to play these concerts
good. And he championed your cause over quite a period, didn't he?
Yeah.
Is that right?
It kind of sounds obvious in a way now, kind of looking back to it, but because I was such a, and we were all massive fans of that program, so we were kind of, you know, we kind of manufactured us. I mean, not on purpose, but we were always going to sound like a band that he would play, because we all loved that program and the music he used to play. So it would have been very disappointing had he not liked us, because, you know, because we sound like one of the, you know, a John Peel kind of band. But yeah, so, and then over the years, you know, we developed and we changed, but yeah, you always used to, you know, like play the records. So, and I think you quite like the idea, you know, we were never, and still not really, you know, one of those bands like album, tour, album, tour, album. You know, we've always done kind of weird stuff, if you like, you know, so we did a few sessions actually for John Peel as Ukrainian, you know, Ukrainian folk music, playing Ukrainian folk, which is, people are like, what? But you're an indie rock band, suddenly you're playing Ukrainian folk music. And when we signed to RCA Records, that was our first release. So that was quite an odd thing to do. And then, you know, I had the project called Cinerama, which was kind of my solo project for a while. And we, you know, we did 12 singles in a year. And,
yes, I know.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of kind of odd little things. And I think, you know, he kind of liked that, you know. So, yeah, he stayed with me right till the end, really. And
wow.
Yeah, we did a lot of sessions for that program. And
sure. And the band's gone through numerous personnel changes over the years.
Yeah. I've been the remaining original member since 1993, so been quite a while.
Okay, yeah. So you're back now in Leeds. You're going to do this 40th anniversary gig. Tell me a little bit about that, how it came about.
It just dawned on me that, because the first single, Go Out and Get 'Em Boy, which I was talking about that Peel played, it was released in May in 1985. And I was just looking at, you know, my diary, I suppose, thinking what we're going to do, last year, I was thinking what we're going to do for 2025. And we had this, you know, North America tour planned. And I just thought, it would be really good to actually go back to Leeds and, you know, do a one-off concert, basically. I mean, it ended up being two in the end because we were playing in Scarborough the day after. But but initially, it was this idea of just doing this one-off concert in Leeds, at Leeds University, you know, because we, you know, often we play at the O2 Academy now, okay, or the Brood and Ale Club, mm-hmm, or whatever. But the idea of going back to literally where, you know, the band was formed and playing this concert as a 40th anniversary little event, sure. So...
And will it be a greatest hits package, or is it going to be the more recent
stuff? It's not really, because we are going to do a tour at the end of the year, which is a full 40th anniversary tour in September, October. And I was kind of asking people, you know, should that be like a greatest? I mean, two things. One is we're not really a hits band.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, yeah, the most kind of, you know, well-known,
exactly,
like popular thing. And a lot of people said, actually, no, because we hear those all the time. So it would kind of be interesting to hear, you know, sort of stuff we, you know, don't play sometimes. So I started working on this set, which is kind of my idea of a retrospective throughout the 40 years, you know, right from the first single, which we obviously will play, but then also to a brand new song. And then just, you know, kind of litter it in between with not necessarily the most popular. I mean, there will be the popular ones in there, but also a few ones that people might not expect. And just, you know, trying to, you know, give examples of the different eras in a way. So I think that'd be more interesting. And again, it's a bit more wedding present, you know, to do that. Because I know a lot of bands who, especially, you know, we've never kind of gone away, really, apart from the little Cinerama break. But a lot of bands kind of disappeared in the 80s and then they've reformed. And they do these greatest hits sets, which is fine. But then if they play again next year, what, you could do the same set? You know, it's kind of like, it just feels a bit boring to me.
It must be boring to play the same songs over and over again, or is it not?
Well, it's still, it's exciting, you know, even if it played a song a thousand times, there's something about, like, being on a stage and, you know, it's that communication with an audience and the backwards and forwards, and, you know, live music, I think, is thrilling, really. So so it's never boring, but I kind of just feel like it'd be a bit of a shame just to stick to the same set of the most well-known tracks all the time. So, and you know, people know that anyway. I think people who come to see Wedding Present Concerts know that there's going to be stuff that's not always the obvious thing.
Right, okay. So has your audience aged with you, or have you managed to pull in a younger crowd as well?
A bit of both, actually. There are people who have been there from day one. And that, you know, they're very fond of telling me, really.
Yeah, including our poet laureate, I understand.
Yeah, exactly. And our Prime Minister.
Really?
Yes, right, okay. Keir Starmer was a Wedding Present fan. Friends in high places. Yeah. But it's strange, actually, because obviously, you know, the fans who were there from the beginning of Holder's 40 years, their kids are now teenagers, 20s or whatever. And I think when we were kids, we didn't necessarily share our parents' music taste quite as much. I mean, I kind of did because I loved their records, but I don't think I would have gone to a concert with my mum and dad. Whereas now, you know, people do that, and it's a bit more common. So there's a lot of young people coming. But then also, I've noticed that there's a lot of kind of lapsed fans who've come. And, you know, people say, oh, you know, I last saw you in 1992. And I say, well, where have you been for the last, you know, 30 years or whatever? And they say, well, you know, life, we had kids and then we did this. But the kids have gone now and, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so they kind of have more time and more disposable income, I guess. And so we've actually found our audiences, it kind of dipped and then it's increased again. It's quite strange. I mean, it's, as a mathematician, it's obvious, really, I suppose, because you just look at the age, sure. You know, the demographic. Yeah. But that's, yeah, it changes, yeah. You know, the amount of young people versus old people, it changes all the time.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that about people going to concerts with their parents. I would never have gone to a concert with my parents.
It wouldn't have been cool, would it?
No, absolutely not. Yeah. My son loves his music and I love my music, but we do have one kind of intersection, which is Blur, who we both love.
All right, yeah.
So I've been to a couple of Blur gigs with my son, and it's been such a pleasure to be, you know, enjoying the same music as my son does, you know. So tell me as well about the musical, because I didn't, until today, I didn't know anything about it. So tell me what's going on with that.
Well, about, I think, probably about 6 years ago now, this person, I met this person called Matt Aston, and he said, you know, I'm a theatre, well, he's basically a writer, producer, director, you know, in theatre. And he said, I want to make a Wedding Present musical. And I said, can I just stop you there? Because I know absolutely nothing about musicals and I'm not even sure I like them, you know. I don't think it's my kind of thing. And I mean, having said that, you know, I saw Mamma Mia, the film, and I quite liked it because, you know, I'm an ABBA fan. So, you know, I enjoyed that. And he said, well, and he convinced me by saying, it's just basically because of the lyrics. And the way I write lyrics, it's very, you know, it's basically little stories. And they're all very straightforward and about relationships, kind of generally with people. And he said you know, it's ideal, you know, sort of material for a musical. And he said, you know, you don't have to be involved with it, really. I mean, you know, I'm kind of involved in that. I've read the scripts and I'm going to attend some of the rehearsals and that. But like I say, you know, it's completely, you know, it's like me trying to, you know, paint a picture or something. I've got no idea how you do that. So I'm not getting too involved with it. But at the same time, again, it's one of those things that, you know, it seems very Wedding Present because it is so outside of our, sure. You know.
It's not what people would expect.
Exactly, exactly. It's outside of the comfort zone, really.
But so, what a tribute that someone wants to do that with your music.
Very flattering, yeah. Hope it doesn't flop.
So where is this showing? Is it somewhere in Leeds?
Yeah, it's in Leeds. I think it's in Holbeck. Right. And there's a theatre there which is booked, for, I think it's like a two-week span, and apparently it's selling very well. And I think his idea is if it does well, then they could do it elsewhere. But I guess it's like with all these things, it's one step at a time. But so far, because again, you know, I was at the time, I was thinking, you know, they think Wedding Present fans are going to, you know, want to go to that, but apparently they do. So
of course they do.
Yeah.
Will you be there?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, I'll be there for at least some of the rehearsals. And then I hope to be there. Maybe for the first night would be quite good.
Yeah, so lovely.
I can waltz down the red carpet. And, you know.
The adulation of fans.
Exactly.
Why not? Yeah. Who wouldn't want to do that? Tell me, you mentioned their songwriting. Is it something you still do all the time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like second nature to me now, really. Yeah. You know, it's... Yeah. Well, yeah, I've got... I mean, it used to be... I used to carry a little notebook. You know, I used to write ideas in there, but I do it on my phone now. So.
Right, okay.
But apart from that, it's exactly the same, you know. And like I say, in the things I write about, are, you know, they're not, it's nothing too metaphorical or poetic. It's just conversations. You know, people have often said when they've seen my lyrics, it looks like a screen, like a dialogue from a screenplay anyway. So, and I'll hear things, you know, I'll be in a bookshop and read a book or read a newspaper or even overhear someone and think, oh, that's a good, either a good line for a song or a good title for a song or it inspires me to think of a certain subject, you know, especially if people are arguing or something. So, I can't stop myself. I've got to write it down,
good.
You know, in case I need to, you know, come back to that. Because the worst thing is if you don't write it down and you forget it and then you think, oh, what was that?
Realise you've forgotten something great.
Exactly. Yeah. Horrible.
Do you still have influences? Are there still people who you listen to and you love or whatever and you draw from them, or is that too fanciful a notion?
I think when we started, you know, there were definitely certain bands that you can hear in our sound. And I would say there's a band I actually went to school with, this band in Manchester called The Chameleons. And so there's a bit of that. And then there was like Postcard Records, Jangly, The Velvet Underground, and, you know, and general punk and that. But then we got to this kind of feeling that we were kind of creating like a wedding present sound, which didn't really sound like other people so much. Maybe half a dozen songs in, we had the lineup change, we got a drummer, and it was suddenly all, it kind of moved up a level, really. And I think then we tried not to be influenced. You know, if we were writing something and somebody said, oh, wait a minute, that sounds like, you know, the Pixies or whatever, we'd say, oh, yeah, we don't want people saying, oh, you're copying the Pixies. So we'd move away from it, really. So I think the answer to your question is I'm kind of influenced all the time and inspired, but not directly. You know, I'm still fascinated to hear, you know, bands. I'm fascinated by radio. I'm seeing bands on TV and stuff, you know. Wet Leg got a new album out. I'm looking forward to hearing that, you know, things like that. So, but I'm not necessarily influenced by them kind of musically anymore, I don't think.
Sure. And what's next? Will there be in 10 years' time, 10 years' time, will we be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the wedding present? Or?
Well, if you'd have told me I'd be celebrating the 40th, I would have, you know. I mean, to me, the 40th is anniversaries bands like the Rolling Stones or, you know, status quo.
I thought exactly that today.
Yeah. Not me. Yeah. So I guess they're on for like the 60th or 70th now. But I've got no inkling of stopping it at the moment. So why not, really? Who knows what will happen?
Good. Well, it's been really lovely to talk to you, and thanks very much for coming in and coming
Great
back
pleasure.
To campus. And hope the reunion concert and the reception musical are a big success.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of Leeds Voices. It was presented by me, Ed Newbold, and it was edited and produced by Simon Jenkins. Leeds Voices is brought to you by the advancement team at the University of Leeds. You can follow us on social media at Leeds Alumni, or email us alumni@leeds.ac.uk.